as well as support from 580 1059 KMJ. This is the Matty Report, Valley Views Edition. Now here's your host, Mark Kepler.
The legislature's passed and the governor has signed a major new transportation package that'll help fix California's crumbling highways, roads, and bridges. But it's going to come at a cost, $5.2 billion a year in new gas taxes and vehicle fees. Will it make a difference? And while we're at it, what's going on with high-speed rail? We'll ask Brian Kelly, the California Secretary of Transportation, Lisa Marie Alley with the California High-Speed Rail Authority, Dan Walters with CalMatters, and John Myers with the LA Times. Transportation fixes? Pay me now or pay me later.
We'll also hear from Aaron Hakimi with the Kern Cog, Tony Boren with the Fresno Cog, Patrick Pininger with the Merced Cog, and Rosa de Leon Park with the Stanislaus Cog.
Additional funding for the Matty Report made possible by a grant from The Wonderful Company, harvesting health and happiness around the world. Chevron's Coalinga oil field and Fresno County have been doing side by side for over 100 years. Learn more at doers.com. Bonner Family Foundation, Community Medical Centers, Harris Ranch Inn and Restaurant, Nossaman LLC, Sagasser Watkins and Whelan, and Valley Children's Hospital. From the California Channel at the State Capitol and the Matty Institute, it's the Matty Report with Executive Director of the Matty Institute, Mark Kepler.
Welcome. So what is the current condition of the state's highways and bridges, and what will it cost to repair and maintain them? Our guest is someone who knows, California Secretary of Transportation, Brian Kelly. Welcome to the Matty Report.
Thanks. I'm happy to be here.
So I'm sure a lot of people in our audience have their own experiences with California roads and bridges, but you actually, the State Department of Transportation, actually collects data on the condition of state roads and highways. What does your data show?
Well, particularly during the conversation on SB1 in the legislature, the funding bill, California ranks roughly 45th nationally in the condition of our highway pavement. We have 500 bridges that are defined by the federal government as structurally deficient. And about 41% of our pavement today is either in need of repair or preventative maintenance.
So in the pavement, they actually re-rate pavement, right? So it goes from what, poor to good?
Poor to good to fair, right.
Yeah.
That's right.
And a lot of it is in poor condition.
Well, as I said, 41% either needs major repair, replacement, or preventative maintenance.
And think of the magnitude of the problem. We have, I think, if I'm, you're going to correct me if I'm wrong, but 350,000 miles of road, state and local. We've got 25,000 bridges, and we've got 35 million plus motorists.
That's right.
A lot of people.
California has the biggest and most complex transportation system in the country, and when I think about it, when you just look at how many miles we drive on the road every year, it's on the order of 332 billion miles a year. And just to give it some perspective on that, that's the same amount as like Florida and Texas combined.
Wow.
So it's mammoth here.
Car culture.
Yes.
So let me ask you about this. There's been a lot of talk for some time about the maintenance and rehabilitation backlog that exists on state roads and bridges. How big is that backlog?
Well, again, prior to the enactment of SB1, we identified that as about a $6 billion annual deferred maintenance backlog on our bridge and highway rehabilitation and replacement program. So significant.
So I was reading some of your stuff, and I don't want to get too wonky
here for
our audience, but there's a highway maintenance program,
yes,
and there's a state highway operation protection program.
That's right, the SHOP, yes.
SHOP.
Yes.
And I was looking at that. There was something like they were saying, this might have been the LAO, was saying that there's one is $3 billion in backlog, and the other is $9 billion.
Yeah, we're changing the way we do this because we're getting better at the data, and we're moving to an asset management plan, which combines both maintenance and the SHOP. But where we had been is the SHOP needs were about $8.1 billion a year, and we only had revenue at $2.3 billion. So we had a $5.8 billion.
Billion, with a B.
With a B, yeah. A deferred maintenance backlog or underinvestment in that area. And that's why when we pushed SB1 during the legislative cycle earlier this year, we focused on fix it first.
Yeah, it's interesting. There was a field poll done a while ago about what Californians feel about roads. Do they want to see new construction? Do they want to see maintenance? And actually, they want to see maintenance. 71%
They do. I mean, you may be familiar with this, but there's other studies that show what the impact on the common motorist is on their vehicle and costs to their vehicle by unmaintained roads. And so we were not surprised that a lot of folks want those potholes fixed, and we want to get them fixed.
Yeah, pay me now or pay me later.
Exactly.
There are some that are going to argue that, listen, there's enough federal, state, and local dollars to really take care of this. You know, just make Caltrans more efficient. Mm-hmm. Why don't you buy that argument? I mean, it's not as simple as that, I assume, in your mind?
Well, look, we are always striving for greater efficiency, and I think people ought to know that Caltrans is much more efficient as an organization today than it has been in decades. Caltrans's capital support, which is the team that puts together the projects to be ready to list to go to construction, they do the design work and the environmental work on projects, their level of staff for those purposes is at a 19-year low. Today, and Caltrans is delivering roughly the same amount of projects with about 4,000 fewer staff than they were 10 years ago.
And the revenue coming in because cars have got better efficiency, they're electric cars. There are things that are actually reducing the amount of revenue coming in.
That's right. That plus inflation, because gas tax for a long time was
decades.
Yes, and it was flat and didn't grow with either inflation or demand or population size or anything. So. You erode the value of the gas tax. You increase the efficiency of cars. You erode it even further.
And meanwhile, the construction materials are not going down.
That's right.
Going up,
that's
so.
Right. And I think it's worth noting that we had not touched the gas tax in California in 28 years.
Yeah, it's been a while.
So, yeah.
It's been 28 years. That was pretty amazing. The federal gas tax, same thing. I mean,
been a little bit less. I think 93 was their last time.
Decades. Yeah. We're talking decades. Yeah. Let me ask this last question, this segment, about this $5.2 billion a year for transportation.
Yes.
That's going to, gas tax is kicking in on November 1. Just to put it in perspective, how much money is currently budgeted for transportation each year in California?
Well, Caltrans's budget itself is about just over $10.7 billion a year, but that includes dollars that we give directly to the local governments.
Okay.
To put it in a broader perspective, California spends between local, state, and federal money $27 billion annually on transportation, but that is all things transportation, state, federal, local, all needs, all elements, and local governments provide about half of that, the state provides about a quarter, and the federal government provides about a quarter.
Okay, well, up next we're going to talk about how that new money is going to be spent, that conversation in a moment. This is the Maddie Report. Welcome back. I'm Mark Kepler with the Maddie Institute. It's important to note that while no one probably wants to pay or see a gas tax increase, someone suggests it's really, we talked about earlier, kind of pay me now or pay me later, maybe with a new front end alignment. So there's going to be additional money that's going to be paid by California taxpayers, $5.2 billion a year. Is it going to be a good return for California motorists? We're talking with California Secretary of Transportation Brian Kelly. So can you break down the revenue? Where's the money coming from, and how is it going to be spent?
Yeah, the revenue is coming from several different sources. I mean, we are returning to a philosophy and a principle that was followed in California for nearly 90 years since 1923, which was let's fund transportation with user fees from transportation, and let's dedicate those to that purpose. So SB1 goes back to what has worked, as I said, for nearly 100 years in California. The gas tax, diesel tax, and a vehicle fee are the heart of what SB1 included in it. And so, that is a philosophy that has been shared by Republicans and Democrats alike. Ronald Reagan increased the gas tax at the federal level, and George Duke Majan was the last governor in California to do it before
it's
this
been
one.
Been a while.
Yeah, but my point is, this is it should be a non-controversial source to go back to user fees dedicated to transportation that come from the transportation sector. Again, it's tried and true. It's what we've done. All of those, sort of everybody paying some share, provides the necessary revenue.
Even those driving electric cars now are going to have a fee.
They will.
In 2020,
$100 fee beginning in 2020. So again, the thought was everybody benefits, everybody has a share to pay.
Right. So let's talk about the use
of
the money. It seems to be a heavy emphasis on maintenance.
There is. Fix It First is clearly the focus of this. As I mentioned, we have big needs with bridges and pavement and culverts in California that are not in great shape. Our bridges are antiquated. So we're going to use these dollars to upgrade bridges, modernize them to today's standards. We're going to improve the pavement on some 17,000 miles of highway lanes in California. And we're going to fix 55,000 culverts, which are really important elements to make sure that water can flow underneath our transportation systems without flooding. And that's vitally important in the state as well.
a lot of this money is going to be used on roads. It's some money is going to be used for mass transit, but about, what, 70% of the funds are going to be used for roads?
About 65%. Most of it is, as I said, fix it first. But, yeah, the thrust of this is improving the structures that people drive on.
As much as I enjoy bike lanes and bike trails, that's not what the money is going to be. Some money is actually going to be spent there, but not the lion's share is going to be toward roads.
You know, you really can't pass a transportation funding package through the legislature without doing something for everybody. Yeah. So there is money in here for trade corridor improvements, and there's money in here for bike and pedestrian facilities. But as you noted, 66%, about two-thirds of the money is going to fixing our roads and bridges.
So how do you going to make sure that this money is going to be spent efficiently and effectively? Like, talk about Caltrans, for example, their performance.
Yeah. There's a couple of things that were included in SB1 that I think are relevant here. One, in terms of staffing levels at the department, for the first time, the California Transportation Commission, which is a public body that oversees Caltrans, will have a role in looking at and improving staffing levels for the Fix It First projects at Caltrans. That's one. The bill also included an inspector general office at Caltrans to assure that programs are being performed efficiently, will be subject to audit and review by an inspector general. It's the first time we've included that at the Department of Transportation here in California.
They're also demanding $100 million in savings.
I mean, there's always efficiencies that we're chasing. And I think as a matter of how many projects that we are producing with the level of staff we have, I think we're going to be able to identify real savings and show that we're operating more efficiently.
Well, the legislative analyst, you know, was looking at this, seems to generally like it, but they're saying, you know, we really should probably have some metrics along the way, some interim guidelines. What are your thoughts on that?
I agree, and we committed, in fact, in SB1 itself, we committed to very specific performance outcomes. We said how many bridges we're going to fix over a 10-year horizon, how many miles of highway lanes we're going to improve the pavement on. Local governments are submitting their project list to the CTC starting next month. So we've already committed to this, and we put in the bill, let's work with the California Transportation Commission to upgrade those performance measures as we go forward. So I welcome the input from the LAO or anybody else, and we look forward to moving those to make sure we're hitting the right targets.
Let me ask you about gridlock. I mean, that's a big issue, maybe not so much in the Central Valley, but certainly in Los Angeles and San Francisco. What's being done here to address gridlock?
Well, a lot. I mean, one, while there's an emphasis on Fix It First, it's important to note that we're also focusing money on a program called the Congested Corridors Program. And what we're trying to award here is we see localities around the state that for the first time are taking more comprehensive approaches to congestion. Rather than just building a lane, they're looking at the entire corridor and saying maybe it needs a lane, maybe it needs a transit help, maybe it needs a bus rapid transit. For the first time, we're putting up state money for a match program for locals that are taking a comprehensive approach to congestion, and the state's going to help fund that broader approach.
Yeah, I want to ask you this last thing, the future of transportation. It seems like it's changing at such a rapid pace.
Yeah.
Hydrogen highways and you know, autonomous vehicles. What are you doing to plan for the future?
Well, you know, we're doing a lot. My Department of Motor Vehicles is completing a rulemaking now to allow for further testing and deployment of autonomous vehicles without drivers behind the wheel. And that rulemaking will be done by the end of 2017. So we're moving forward on that. SB1 itself requires Caltrans to, when they're replacing a segment of road, to consider how to put into the new roadway better sensors, better striping to deal with the technology that's coming.
It's just, yeah.
And so we're beginning that process now, but it's incorporated in much of the work that we're doing on a day-to-day basis. Of course, we're also trying to build the nation's first high-speed rail system.
Yeah, and actually, we're going to talk about that in the next segment. But I want to thank California Secretary of Transportation Brian Kelly for joining us, and we're going to talk about the current status of the state's first-in-the-nation high-speed rail project in a moment. This is the Matty Report. Welcome back. I'm Mark Kepler with the Matty Institute. So what's the current status of the state's high-speed rail project? Our guest is Lisa Marie Alley with the High-Speed Rail Authority. Welcome.
Thanks, Mark.
So one issue that's been dogging the program is financing. Skeptics are going to say, listen, you've only secured 60% of the funding to complete the first operating segment between North Bakersfield and San Jose. They're going to say, by the way, this entire project is $64 billion. Where's the money? So how do you pay for that first segment between North Bakersfield and San Jose, and how do you pay for the entire project, at least this first major part of it, that is LA to San Francisco?
Well, we're connecting the Silicon Valley to the Central Valley, and that's costing us about $20.8 billion, and that's a mix of federal, state dollars. The state dollars are our Prop 1A bonds that the voters passed in 08, and the cap and trade revenue coming in from the annual program. That has fluctuated over the few auctions, but it's starting to stabilize.
And we anticipate they renewed it to 2030, so that was a big deal.
They did, and that, I think, helped stabilize the market.
And the last auction, I think, went very well as a result.
It did. We estimate about $500 million a year from that program to help us get to that $20 billion cost for Valley to Valley.
You know, there was a recent story about a $50 million contract amendment for some unanticipated construction costs. What can you tell us about that?
So in big infrastructure projects like this, you're going to see cost pressures, but where you see cost pressures, you also see cost savings. So right now in the Central Valley, we have 119 miles under construction, and what you're referring to is some cost increases to some of the work we were doing there to acquire property and to work on third party. But we don't see it as an overall budget concern at this time.
Because it's already in the budget,
right? Correct.
I mean, you anticipate in these large projects, multi-billion dollar projects, there might be some cost overruns, and there's going to be some cost savings, I assume, right? So
absolutely.
This is factored in.
And this is us being transparent with the public and open about where we're spending the money and how we're spending it.
Okay. So, you know, even if you secure sufficient funding, the skeptics are still going to say, listen, you're talking about having this completed between North Bakersfield and San Jose by 2024, but you got ongoing lawsuits, you've got securing land, you've got environmental requirements. What's your response?
Well, we've had a lot of successes to get the Valley Valley up and running by 2025. Just this month, we'll have expended $2.55 billion to get 119 miles under construction. We've put over 1,400 building craftsmen and women to work. We have hundreds of small businesses. So yes, there's always going to be challenges with major infrastructure projects, but the amount of progress we've made in the short 5 years since our funding was appropriated is significant for a project of this size.
There were some recent decisions by the courts about whether CEQA would apply. And they said, yeah, you're probably going to have to apply. Follow that, and CEQA has a tendency to take some time to get through that process. So what are any concerns there?
No, because we've always planned to do CEQA and NEPA, the federal and state environmental clearance, and we're going to continue to do that.
Okay, so every other year, I guess, even year, you guys have to do a updated business plan. So I'm just wondering, so the next updated business plan is 2018. Do you anticipate any major changes?
So right now we're working to put that together. We issue the draft in February for a 60-day public comment period. There's usually legislative hearings, there's input from the board, and then we'll adopt it in April and submit it to the legislature in May. It's hard to say at this point. We still are focused on getting Valley to Valley up, because once you initiate passenger service, you bring in that private sector investment to help build out the rest of the system. And by law, we have got to build the San Francisco to LA base to connect and transform the state.
Yeah. So speaking of transforming the state, I want to ask you about some of the unique opportunities with high-speed rail. Now, there's a major housing crisis on the coast, particularly in Silicon Valley and the Bay Area. High-speed rail would connect that to the Central Valley. Could the Central Valley someday be home to Silicon Valley workers?
We hope so. Right now, it takes about 3 hours to drive from Fresno to the Bay Area. On high-speed rail, it will take less than 60 minutes. Think about the opportunity that provides the Silicon Valley if they want to open a back-end operation or a new facility in Fresno. They've got educated students coming out of some of the great UC systems and state schools in the Valley, and they have cheaper housing and affordable housing. It also helps an area that's been hurt by the recession continue to recover. And that's one of the big opportunities that connecting the Valley to the Silicon Valley and the Central Valley.
You know, it's interesting. There was a UCLA study, not on this particular product, but on China and the effects that its high-speed rail had on these what they call secondary cities. And the researcher apparently said, you know, Bakersfield is like those secondary cities. And he made a comment that there are some serious real estate implications for Bakersfield if this happens.
It's important. Not only will Bakersfield be connected to Fresno and the Silicon Valley, but it will also connect the gap between the Tehachapi Mountains to connect Bakersfield down to Southern California, which also opens a big market there for opportunities for housing, for opportunities for businesses and people.
Yeah, that would be incredible. Perhaps we're going to see a historic population shift.
We could. I think the Valley would be proud of that.
That would be great. Well, anyway, thank you very much for talking with us. Up next, the politics of transportation. That conversation in a moment. This is the Maddie Report. Welcome back. This is Mark Kepler with the Maddie Institute. We're talking about the politics of transportation now with two guests, Dan Walters with CalMatters and John Myers from the LA Times. So, Dan, let me start with you first. We were just talking about high-speed rail in the earlier segment. We have former LA Mayor Antonio Villaraigosa kind of positioning himself as pro-high-speed rail. As opposed to former San Francisco mayor, current Lieutenant Governor Gavin Newsom, seems to be lukewarm at best toward high-speed rail. Is that going to hurt or help Villaraigosa?
I don't think it's going to help him, except maybe in Fresno, to tell you the truth.
Which might help.
Maybe that'll be critical. I don't know.
He is focusing on the Valley.
The bullet train, as I like to call it, is not popular in California. I mean, the bloom is off that rose, basically, and it's now, I think, seen increasingly as something of a joke, to tell you the truth. And once they build that train to nowhere down the valley, it ends at a, what is it, is a orchard near Fowler or something
like
that.
It's a Shafter, is actually.
Shafter,
yeah, north of Bakersfield.
Near Shafter. Mm-hmm. That's about it until they come up with some more money. And there's all sorts of things kicking around, like, oh, taking the cap and trade money and using that to service a loan of some kind and so forth to build the next segment, which is B to Chowchilla to San Jose. Right. But nobody's kind of figured it out yet, and in the absence of money, it's probably not going to happen.
What do you think?
Well, I don't know that there's a downside for Villaraigosa here, right? Let's look at the person that the next governor wants to replace. Jerry Brown has been, I want to say passionate, but then I don't want to say passionate because he hasn't talked about high-speed rail, I don't think, quite as much as maybe he needed to, I think, in terms of a sales pitch to maybe change the conversation. But he has supported it all the way through, downsized the project some a little bit when he came on board. So you're trying to replace that person. And it seems like to me for Villaraigosa, if you don't poke the bear, so to speak, right here, by saying I hate it or I want to kill it, like that's a problem for the other candidates. If the governor comes out and has a fight with him in 2018, this project's got a long way to go. And Dan's exactly right. Money is its biggest problem, federal money or private money. The next governor, no matter what they say on the campaign trail, has got something else to do once
it's,
the election.
Isn't it the polling, PPIC polling came out recently, it said that, you know, people support Governor Brown, but they want to see a change in the policies going forward. So I don't know if that helps or hurts Villaraigosa follows him. Let me ask you this, John, about, you know, public consistently says, hey, we want good roads, and they also consistently say we don't want to pay for them. Will the fact that they start seeing improvements on California highways kind of mute the anger toward this gas tax and vehicle fee?
I don't know. I think a lot of things are variables at this point. You know, as we're sitting here talking about this, first of all, the gas tax goes into effect on November 1st. It's going to take a while to see that. We don't know what the price of gas will be on November 1st. So we don't know what the relative effect on someone's pocketbook is going to be. Then we've got to see money go out the door. And the other part that I don't think gets talked a lot about, Mark, is that when, you know, and I talk to my friends about the roads, and the concerns are either there are too many potholes or there aren't enough lanes. Those are vastly different topics that have to be addressed.
And they're spending money on maintenance. They're not spending on capacity.
Yeah, and that's the whole thing. That's part of the conversation, too. So I think you know, does the voter see their bang for the buck? I don't know. But I do think that the price of gas, once this starts, and what it has on that price, that's going to be where the narrative goes somewhat, I think.
And I would say that it also depends on what the gas price, what the price of gas is otherwise. If you notice, we've seen up and down a lot in gas prices in California, most recently because of the hurricane that hit Houston. They've jacked up, and then they've come back down, and they've gone up and down maybe a dime, 15 cents a gallon in the recent weeks. So if you happen to impose that tax at a time of a downtime, it's not going to have the same effect as you would if it was already out in the
uptime. And they are kind of doing that because the summer formula is more expensive, and that stops after November 1st.
Yeah.
And so the price, maybe you won't see it as much.
But I think
we'll see it next year.
The key to this thing is, as we said earlier, this is about maintenance and fixing potholes, so to speak, not about expanding capacity. And the biggest complaint about the highways in California is congestion. We have the most congested roadways in the nation. This is not going to do anything about that. And so, but when they were trying to sell it before the fact, they talked about congestion a lot. So they kind of raised the expectation, the politicians, that this was going to do something about it, all the time knowing that it was never going to be spent on that, because they knew that that was what the public was most concerned about, is congestion. And so I think there could be a big disappointment here when we see congestion get continuously worse. Yeah. It's probably going to backfire a little
so
bit.
So they'll be sitting in traffic, but on very smooth roads.
Well, and the politics of this also gets complicated by the fact that you've got the gas tax, or the fuel taxes, I should say, because there's diesel as well, and you've got this new fee on vehicles. All of this kicks in at different times. What will be going on? What discussion will be out and among the voters and the people when it happens? Let's not forget 2003, when people started getting those vehicle license fee increases. They did not help Gray Davis's chances in that recall election.
Not at all. Well, I want to thank our guests, John Myers with the LA Times, Dan Walters with CalMatters, also California Secretary of Transportation Brian Kelly, and Lisa Murali from the California High Speed Rail Authority.
Up next, we'll talk to Aaron Hakimi with the Kern Cog, Tony Boren with the Fresno Cog, Patrick Pininger with the Merced Cog, and Rosa de Leon Park with the Stanislaus Cog.
You're listening to the Matty Report, Valley Views Edition on KMJ.
Welcome back. As the saying goes, if you want to know what's going on, follow the money. And when it comes to transportation, the local council of government, or COGS, are key. COGS' primary function is transportation planning and programming. As a result, they set policy for a wide variety of transportation projects and often act as a grantor of federal, state, and local self-help dollars in their communities. In short, they are a key funder for many local transportation projects. We're fortunate to have a great cross-section of Valley COG leaders with us today to talk about Valley transportation issues. They are Aaron Hakimi with the Kern COG, Tony Boren with the Fresno COG, Patrick Pininger with the Merced COG, and Rosa de Leon Park with the Stanislaus COG. Welcome to all of you. So, Aaron, let me start with you in Kern. How would you assess the current condition of local roads in Kern County?
I'd give it a D, maybe a D plus if I'm generous. So they need quite a bit of work. We've heard from about 5,000 people in the last several months, and they've told us loud and clear that maintenance is their biggest priority.
That's interesting, because that's a lot of where that state money is going, is toward maintenance. What are your biggest needs? Is there a specific section of road that is problematic in Kern County, or?
No, our biggest needs by far are our local streets and roads. Our cities and our county government have been underfunded for years, maybe even decades. And just being able to keep up with filling the potholes, overlaying their roads, taking care of the shoulders, that by far is our biggest need.
Tony, what about Fresno County? What's the condition of the roads in Fresno County from your perspective?
Well, the term that we use is called the Pavement Condition Index, or PCI. That's the measurement tool that the Public Works use. 2008, we were in Fresno County, we were at 74, right? 2014, we were at 69, so you can see the decline, and we're projected to be in 2024, 10 years down to 53. So again, when I think 66 is the, you don't
right.
want to drop below 66. Anyway, yeah.
Yeah, that's
so
a state.
So we are trending downhill. We've got the same issue that Kern has.
Yeah, I was actually doing some research, and I found that the state network condition score right now is 66 for the state on average. So we're trending. Looks like Fresno County is trending right about average and trending downward. Patrick, what about Merced County?
Well, we don't have really specific data available right now, but our countywide average, unfortunately, for the pavement condition index, our latest data shows it to be actually in the 50s. which of course is a challenge, and so we are really at risk as a further deterioration. So we have a lot to work on.
You know, it was interesting.
Our primary concern is definitely the maintenance of those roads. We do also have other concerns. One of those is the incomplete nature of Highway 99
right,
through Merced
right,
County.
Right.
There are two portions that are not. That are not yet six lanes. They drop from six to four lanes, and that's a traffic congestion issue. It's a freight issue, and it's absolutely a safety issue.
Anybody who drives north on 99 knows that. You know, it's interesting. You're mentioning that you guys are in the 50s, and they say that rural roads in a recent study of the state, they say rural roads have the worst rating. They're at 57. So you're saying that you know Merced County is trending on the bottom end of that scale.
Well, yes, yeah. Unfortunately, we are just now starting the development of a countywide pavement management system that will all of our jurisdictions are going to cooperate on that, and we're going to have some much better numbers in the near future to make sure that we make wise decisions going forward. But we don't have very specific data right now for our county beyond that which was provided to us by the state.
Yeah. So Rosa, what about Stanislaus County? Are you in the same shape as Merced?
Yes, actually, we did do a regional countywide pavement management program, and it also showed that our roads were very, very poor shape. I mean, our average is 55, the PCI that Tony mentioned. Mm-hmm. So it's pretty poor, and we have a lot of rural county roads that are very bad. I'll just give you an example that. And this all goes to funding, but, you know, in the back, historically, the county would be resurfacing 75 to 100 miles of roadway per year. But because of the lack of funding in the past 2 years, they've only resurfaced maybe 3.5 miles per year. So it's definitely shown the decline.
Wow, that's quite a difference.
That is quite a difference. So it's been a huge problem for us. It's one of our largest problems.
You know, Tony, I want to ask you about the cost of building and maintaining streets. I'm assuming, like everything else, it's gone up in cost, right?
Absolutely.
Are you seeing a big spike?
And our funding sources haven't kept pace.
Right. And I want to ask you about that. I mean, the budgets you're saying aren't keeping pace with the rising cost of construction and maintenance of roads?
Right. The gas tax hasn't been increased since, I believe, the mid-90s, right? So for the last 20-plus years, we've just little by little been drifting farther and farther behind. We have more vehicle miles traveled, more population, more vehicle miles traveled, more wear and tear, but our funding sources to take care of it all haven't nearly kept up, and that's why SB 1, I think, ultimately got passed, was because there's just a statewide recognition that we have this concern. World's sixth largest economy, and we've got to have properly functioning transportation infrastructure, or we're cooked.
Well, you know, I want to get into that SB1 in a second, but let me ask you this, Tony. In terms of where your money comes from or for transportation, how much of that is federal money, how much is state money, and how much is local money?
I want to say here, for us, probably local's about 40, the feds are about 40, and the state's about 20.
Okay.
Give or take.
You know, I'm wondering.
It depends on the given year.
Yeah, because first, of course, and we're going to talk about self-help counties in a bit. But, Aaron, Kern County is not a self-help county. What is your breakdown in terms of where transportation dollars come from to get into Kern County?
Well, it's similar to Tony's, but it's skewed a little bit more towards federal because of a very large earmark we received in 2005 that's just about to expire. And it's we obviously don't have a sales tax measure. We are not a self-help county, so we have a little bit less local funding going to the roads. But what Tony didn't mention, and I'd like to add on a little bit to why costs have risen, as the roads and highways deteriorate, it costs exponentially more to maintain and to fix them as they get worse and worse. Sort of like your car. If you change your oil regularly, it's not going to cost all that much, maybe $30 every few months. But if you don't change your oil for, say, 2 or 3 years in a row, you're going to blow your engine, and it's going to cost you thousands of dollars to repair it. And that's what's going on with our roads. Our costs are rising because we are letting our roads and highways deteriorate so much that the cost to repair them skyrockets.
Yeah, I think I read somewhere something like 16 to 1 in terms of cost savings. It costs 16 times as much to build a new road as to maintain an existing road. So it seems to make sense to maintain what you have. I want to ask Patrick and Rosa that same kind of question. Where is your money coming from in terms of transportation dollars? Patrick, first with you in Merced County. Where's the money coming from for roads in Merced?
Well, predominantly it's come from, I think the state is the leading source, followed by federal, and there hasn't been very much local funding until, recently the passage of Measure V in Merced County, and which obviously is going to change the dynamic, and of course, SB1 is going to change the dynamic as well. So yes, yeah, it's been primarily state funds, including the gas tax, of course. But yeah, and I'll just echo my colleague's comments about the ever increasing backlog and just how far behind we've fallen. And indeed, when you look at pavement management systems, if you don't if you don't manage your pavement, you know, correctly, it eventually will kind of go off a cliff in terms of condition, both specific roads and overall. So yeah, unfortunately it's a challenge being faced, you know, by not only the areas where we are, but across the country.
Yeah, and there's a difference between maintenance and rehabilitation and new construction, right? I mean, maintenance is the least expensive way to handle it, just maintain it. And then rehab is when you got to go in there and do significant work. And, of course, new construction is new construction. So different costs along the way, probably best to maintain those things. So, Rosa, let me ask you, in Stanislaus County, what's your breakdown in terms of where you're receiving money, federal, state, local?
Thank you. Yes, it's pretty much the same as my colleagues that they've already expressed. I mean, we get federal dollars, which we really rely on for some of these overlays and making these improvements, and then some state, but majority is probably more for us was federal and state and very small local.
Well, let me ask you, Rosa,
and
about
now with us.
Yeah, I want to ask you about SB1 because I know you're going to go right into that. Let me ask you about this new transportation package, $5.2 billion a year. Going to transportation, essentially half of that's going to state highways, the other half is going to local projects. How is it going to impact you in Stanislaus County?
Well, we're pretty excited over this. As you know, we passed our half-cent sales tax, but SB1 is really going to help improving some of those local roads that, you know, we were not able to make improvements. So it's going to help significantly for us here in our county. Our cities are already looking into how they're going to program and improve some of their local streets.
So drivers
they're
are
packaging
gonna,
up.
You think drivers are going to see a big difference in Stanislaus County over the next 2 years?
I feel they will, because the city planners and city engineers are already working on their list of where they're going to start and making improvements, like now.
Okay. Well, Aaron, what about the other end of the valley in Kern County? What do you think the impact of SB1 is going to have in Kern County?
It is truly a game changer. Many of our public works departments at the city and county level were on the verge of having to lay off more people. This will allow us to make a huge dent in the backlog. It won't allow us to fix everything, but it will be a game changer. I foresee in the next 3 years, at least in metropolitan Bakersfield, there being almost constant construction on the freeways and local roads.
Okay, so people are going to have to put up with a little bit of inconvenience, but at the end of the road, as it were, they're going to have some good roads to drive over. I mean, I got to tell you, there's a huge difference when you're driving over well-maintained roads. I was in Kansas a few years ago, and it was the southeast portion of the state, and I was driving on a highway. I couldn't believe how good the condition was. It was incredible, like driving on a brand new road. Let me ask Tony, in terms of Fresno County, what about SB1's impact in Fresno County?
We're very excited, Mark. Just to Aaron's point, we anticipate the same thing, that there's a lot of money here for rehab and maintenance kind of activities. So we anticipate seeing construction going everywhere. Now, just to give you a feel for what it's going to mean in terms of actual dollars and cents, for the Fresno County, in 2017-18, they're going to get about 5.9, almost 6 million, right?
Okay.
Next year, 2018-19, that's going to increase to 16.5 million.
Whoa, that's right? A big jump.
Year after that, 16.7, right? 10 years from now, that 5.9 or 6 will grow to 22.5, right? And that's 2024, just to give you a sense of some of the scale of these dollars.
It's like so a 400%.
There's going to be a lot of money to take care of this existing system.
Yeah, that's a 400% increase. No, it's interesting, Patrick, you were talking about the roads, you know, in Merced County, you're saying they're in the 50s level. And I was looking at my notes here, and the PCI, what's considered basically failing, is a PCI of 55. And you're saying you're trending in that area right now. Is SB1 going to help?
Oh, yes, absolutely. In fact, as is going on in the other counties, our jurisdictions are developing the list of their projects. The county has already, you know, put out their list. It includes 15 miles of overlays, some active transportation, bicycle and pedestrian projects. You know, one thing to note is that there has been such a there's been such a lack of money for such a long time, it actually is an effort that our jurisdictions are going through, the public works departments and the city managers and the planners, to actually gear up to get these projects going. Some of these projects are more complicated. So some of the first projects out of the gate are going to be the ones that are the easiest to implement. But they will certainly make, you know, if you can go do 15 miles of overlays in the county here in the near future, that will make a big impact. And all the jurisdictions, we have, six cities in the county that are all developing their own lists. So they're working very hard at the local level to get the projects out as quickly as they can. And as they go through this process, they'll be able to take on larger and more challenging projects, you know, like complete reconstructions, as they can become more capable of actually having money to spend.
Yeah, that'll make a big difference. Well, up next, we're going to talk about self-help counties. What exactly does that mean? Well, actually, it's all about leveraging federal and state transportation dollars. That conversation in a moment. This is the Matty Report, Valley Views Edition.
You're listening to the Matty Report, Valley Views Edition on KMJ.
Welcome back. We're talking about the condition of local streets and roads in the Valley with Aaron Hakimi with the Kern Cog, Tony Boren with the Fresno Cog, Patrick Pittinger with the Merced Cog, and Rosa de Leon Park with the Stanislaus Cog. While the state recently enacted new taxes to maintain the state's highways and assist local governments with their transportation needs, counties can consider their own, quote-unquote, self-help transportation taxes. Increasingly, many Valley communities, but not all, are saying yes to such self-help taxes. Why or why not? So, Tony, in Fresno County in 2006, the voters reauthorized its self-help transportation tax that at first was approved by the voters in 1986. And that needs a two-thirds supermajority to pass. So how much money has been generated from the Measure C self-help tax in Fresno County, and what's it being spent on?
Sure. The 1986 measure raised about $700 million, and our 2006 measure we anticipate to raise about $1.4 billion. So between the two of them, $2 billion worth of revenue for transportation projects. And truth be told, Mark, those revenues have built pretty much all of our urban freeway system, 41 North, 41 South, 180, all those segments of 180, both east and west.
Don't forget 168.
Out to Clovis, up to Sierra National Forest. All of those were Measure C funded.
Yeah, you see those signs all over town, Measure C, brought to you by Measure C. And I think people realize the value of that because it's hard to get a two-thirds supermajority vote. But guess what? They did it in Merced and Stanislaus County. In November 2016, they passed a self-help tax. So I want to ask Patrick first, how much was the new tax that you got out of the self-help tax, and what are you spending the money on in Merced County?
Well, thank you very much. This is really exciting times for us. It passed in 2016, and the forecast for revenue is about $450 million over the next 30 years. And we've only gotten about 4 months of data so far, and it's coming in slightly above forecast, which is wonderful. The unique thing, I think, about Merced County is that the measure was passed without a specific list of projects to be addressed. Basically, half of the money is being distributed directly to our seven jurisdictions, the six cities in the county, and about 5% of the money goes to the transit service in the county, and basically the remainder of the money is basically yet to be determined.
Wow, that's
proportionally set up for the east side and west side of the county, and we have regional committees that are meeting to determine how those funds will be spent.
That's a lot of money. There's going to be a lot of discussion, let's say, about where that money goes.
Yes, there absolutely will.
And you're going to be right in the middle of it. Good for you.
You are correct.
So, by the way, how much was that tax in Merced County?
Oh, it's a half cent. It's a half cent sales tax that's generating about $15 million a year for a 30-year period.
Yeah, that's. And by the way, one thing we'll talk about is the ability to leverage those funds. I mean, one of the nice things that these self-help taxes do is a lot of times federal and state dollars require you to match. And these dollars are a match. So you get a kind of a double bang for the buck. So Stanislaus County also passed a self-help tax. So Rosa, tell me about your tax. How much was it? What's the money being spent on?
Okay. Actually, we're a little different from Merced's. Actually, we did have specific projects. Our process started two years ahead of coming to the voters. And so we did a surveys and asking really what the voters would support, because this was our third attempt. And we heard loud and clear, fix our roads first. So our expenditure plan is 50% to local roads first, maintenance of the potholes. Pretty much people were saying, fix our potholes. There's a 10% for traffic management, signalization projects, 5% for bike and pedestrian, and then there's a 28% that goes to like 15 regional projects, specific projects, and those are all throughout the county. Then there's another component of it for other projects like rail, transit, community connections, and a door-through-door service for seniors.
How much money is it going to generate?
It's going to generate about $38 million. We were very conservative with our number, showing $38 million. But like Patrick mentioned, our revenues are coming a little higher, which is better to know that. But we did it at $38 million a year. It's going to be approximately $960 million for the duration of the plan of 25 years.
So a 25-year project. It's really interesting the way different counties are approaching this. You know, in Fresno County, for example, and editor's note, I was on the steering committee of the Measure C proposal in 2006. You know, they did a survey of voters, and they asked them, you know, where do you want the money spent on? There was like 36 projects. And I will put a little plug in for a project that I particularly was involved with, and that is the Trail Project. It was ranked third out of the 36 projects in terms of where people want to have their money spent. But that's very helpful when you're trying to pass one of these supermajority tax issues to know what the voters want the money spent on. But that leaves kind of Aaron out there at Kern County, along with Kings County, out there kind of by themselves in that they don't have a self-help tax. So I want to ask you, you know, about that, Aaron. Is Kern County at a disadvantage when it comes to federal and state transportation funding because they don't have those self-help dollars to match with federal and state funding to get that extra funding?
Well, absolutely. The Trump administration and the Brown administration have made it crystal clear that leveraging other than federal and state dollars is a huge priority to them. So absolutely we are at a disadvantage. We cannot come to the table like the other counties in the Valley can and match federal and state funds.
Do you think that Kern County voters are going to see that they're leaving money on the table and all that money is going to Fresno and Stanislaus and Merced County, and they might want to have a piece of that action?
Conservatively, I estimate that Kern County has lost out on not a few million dollars, not a dozen, but literally hundreds of millions of dollars by not having the ability to sort of control our own destiny and have our own local dollars. I'm not sure if we're going to get to that two-thirds supermajority anytime soon, but there are many people in Kern County that are realizing slowly that taking matters into our own hands, even though it may involve taxes, could be a good thing.
Yeah, it seems like these things are really, really difficult to pass because with a two-thirds requirement, any kind of organized opposition, anything, basically tubes the project because, you know, generally there's probably about 25% of people are going to say no to any kind of taxes. So, you know, any kind of little bit of opposition, you're going to have a hard time passing these things. Are there certain groups that kind of, you know, are just going to say no to taxes on anything in Kern County?
Oh, absolutely, and I think it's a little bit higher percentage in Kern County than certainly the counties up north. We are still a red county for sure, but there's a growing number of people who are understanding and realizing that the ability to move goods and people is essential to our economy. We have an agricultural and a petroleum-based economy, and if our roads continue to crumble, our economy will crumble.
So you were talking earlier about the roads in Kern County being, you're thinking maybe a D, D plus level. So I'm thinking they're getting close to failure rate, I think, at this point, aren't they?
Many of them are. There are certain roads in eastern Kern County that have completely failed, that have turned to dirt. Yes, absolutely.
So if in the perfect world, probably for you, if you were able to get a self-help tax in Kern County, what would that mean?
That would likely mean that with SB1, there would not be a gap in our funding needs. We could bring all of our roads, and granted it would take, you know, probably 10 to 15 years up to what I would call a B, or a good standard of 80. That would mean a thriving economy, and it would mean also money to complete many of our incomplete road systems, like Patrick mentioned. We could widen 99. We could put truck climbing lanes on 58. All Interstate 5 up and down the valley, instead of being two lanes, could probably be three lanes. It would set us up for the next 30 to 40 years to continue to grow our population and grow our economy.
You know, it'd be interesting to hear from business leaders in Kern County about how transportation, how infrastructure impacts economic development. My guess is significantly. So I guess we'll wait and see what happens in Kern and Kings County. But I want to thank our guests for joining us, Tony Boren with the Fresno Cog, Rosa de Leon Park with the Stanislaus Cog, Patrick Pittinger with the Merced Cog, and Aaron Hakimi with the Kern County Cog. Thanks so much for joining us.
Thank you, Mark.
Yes, thank you.
The views and opinions expressed in the Matter Report are those of the individuals participating in the program and do not necessarily reflect those of the California Channel or the Maddie Institute. If you'd like to share your thoughts about the points and opinions expressed in the Matter Report, visit our website at maddieinstitute.org.
The Maddie Report, Valley Views Edition, is a public affairs partnership between KMJ Radio, Cumulus Media, and the nonpartisan Maddie Institute, providing the Valley with valuable insight and analysis on politics and important public policy issues. This is KMJ.